Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Good planets are in the main.
Right.
Well, have you got time for this show?
I sure do.
You know, it's all Heather Fry all the time.
Every Sunday should
it's
be.
It's the new
just my opinion.
It's Chicago's Progressive Talk new format.
Was that super sweet of Mr. Sanders to let us come in and do that, though, or what?
I think it was awesome.
Yeah.
For a good reason, too.
Exactly.
I mean, this is such an important thing. Yeah. Preserving union rights. It's annoying, really, when you – and you guys discussed it for an hour there, and you talk about how they've been eroded and the – people who defend us and take care of us are and put into their own pensions.
Yep.
And have done so faithfully and negotiated in good faith with our government, our state government, and said this is a contract. It was good to point out that this is constitutional.
Yes.
You know that we've made these arrangements, and if you change them, that's unconstitutional.
Exactly. Well, and like we said, like a lot of this, they're putting out all this propaganda, saying that they're greedy, saying that they're, you know, it's they're stealing, et cetera, et cetera. And I find that asinine because it's like, again, it's like you just said, it was a contract, but again, they're exempt from Social Security. So if you take that away, they have
right,
nothing.
Exactly.
So how are you supposed to work 30 years and provide for your family?
I don't know. And I don't know how they think they can get away with it, but they do. You know, welcome to America. Hey. And you heard at the top of the show, I had to play it, the Michigan fight song. And I know most of you probably don't even care, but I do. University of Michigan, Wolverines beat Ohio State. What's the matter?
I'm not the biggest Michigan fan.
What do you mean? We haven't beat Ohio State in like 7 years.
Well, I'll let you enjoy the victory because I know Mr.
Years.
Cowgill is suffering.
So?
So I'll let you enjoy that.
He's been able to gloat for 7 years.
Yes.
No.
Wasn't it last year that he switched out a bunch of our commercials with the Ohio State fight song?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so I'm really glad you kicked the show off with that. Take that, Ron.
Yeah, there you go. Mr. Mighty House, Saturdays from 7 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk. See if I ever do you any favor by mentioning your show.
Because your football team stinks.
Yeah. They do this year.
Yay!
All right. That's all I'm going to talk about football. That's it. Right there. Because on the show today, I'm very excited. And, you know, Mike Sanders is stepping up big time for all the shows here, for Heather Fry and for me. And next Sunday is our big broadcast. And that is the 3 hours combined Mike Novak show and Our Town. And Mike and I, Mike and Mike on the mic. Next week from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., we'll be hosting the WCPT Holiday Harvest Food Drive.
Yes.
Excuse me. Whoa, swallow.
It's that time of year. I'm fighting one myself.
I just swallowed my tongue.
Yeah, that's problematic when you need to speak.
Yeah, no kidding.
But the Holiday Harvest, I'm super looking forward to it, and I loved what you and Kathleen did on the website, letting people know what, you know, sustainable products you can bring in. And you can check all that out at mikenowak.net. That's N-O-W-A-K.net.
And you look for the Holiday Harvest logo, and you click on that.
Yep.
And
it's also on the radio station's website, right at the one of the first thumbnails at the top of the page, chicagosprogressivetalk.com, and it's the Holiday Harvest, and you can find out everything you want.
And this week we, well, for the past few weeks, we've been highlighting the kinds of things you can donate and keep the drive sustainable. That's been kind of our goal here, is to make our Holiday Harvest drive sustainable, whatever that means to you. Now, it doesn't mean we're going to turn down anything because we're sending it to various, mostly churches are on the list of drop-off locations for the WCPT Holiday Harvest. Of course, one of the drop-off locations is here at Chicago's Progressive Talk, and you'll be here all week, Heather.
Yes, I will.
Sitting out front.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have
smiling.
Yes, as people come by. As a matter of fact, we have that up on the website, too. If you go to also mikenowak.net, I've got all the drop-off locations listed and most of the times. But if you come to WCPT at 6012 South Pulaski Road, right across the street from the 53A bus stop in between
Paco's Tacos
and
Zaka Tacos.
Tacos.
And I was working for Mr. Novak about 2 weeks before I realized that was true.
Yeah, you're serious.
Because I saw Paco's on one side, but I had never gravitated the other way to see Zaka. And then, sure enough, one morning I was like, we are right in between two taco places.
We are. That's Chicago, baby.
It's the real deal. They use the all-natural cilantro and everything. It's good stuff.
and then next, boy, we're just going to
I know.
A coughing fit all day.
Can we bring vitamin C? Do we have a humidifier going on in here?
Can we do something? Can we set up the jacuzzi?
No, if only.
That'd
now,
be nice.
That'll be a drop-off location if we put a jacuzzi in the parking lot.
But the idea is you'll be able to come right to the radio station and put goods in the barrel. We'll have it labeled at all the different places, and I will give the full list of them later on. But we start this Thursday. The 1st of December, go through the 11th. So any time during that period, those 11 days, the 11 days of Christmas, the 11 days of harvest, you can drop off goods for our food drive. And I hope you go to the website and find the place nearest you. And I hope as you're shopping, you're thinking about it and buying a little extra. And just so you can participate and do some good for people who need it, because as I think we're going to find out in a second, let's do this right now. As a matter of fact, let's get our guest, the Reverend Dr. Bill Cherios, is going to be on from the First Free Church in Andersonville, and then Bob Coleman from the North Shore Unitarian Church in Deerfield. They're two of the drop-off locations, and I'll tell you why they're important in a little bit. And we've got five or six others. That I'm very excited about and glad they're part of this. Rick DeMaio weather today, of course, always at in the second half hour. And then at 10 o'clock, we've talked about Medewin National Tall Grass Prairie on the show before. And we're going to talk about it again because I found out, well, a couple of things that have happened. The group called the National Forest Foundation has gotten involved in helping restore prairie to Illinois and with the Medewin National Tallgrass Prairie. And Medewin has become part of their National Forest Foundation Treasured Landscapes campaign. And the idea is to get native plants back there in the 20,000 acres that used to be called the Joliet Arsenal. But what I found really cool was they're also talking about repopulating it with bison. How awesome would that be to have bison where the deer and the antelope play in the Joliet Arsenal? Have bison.
That would be so neat.
I know, because bison.
Once upon a time, they were there.
Yeah, they were. One of the things I did, and I'll talk about this later too, is one of the things I did was I did some tracking of what happened to the bison in America, and there's a link on this week's show, and it's the it's very, very odd, but it's the timeline of the American bison. And if you want to see a sad, sad tale,
aww,
what we did to the passenger pigeon, we almost did to the bison. I don't even know why there are still bison left.
Because they're yummy.
No, that's not why they're still around. Well, maybe.
Part of it is because now
yeah,
they do breed
in for meat. Yeah, but passenger pigeons were yummy, too, and they're gone.
And they were useful. They did things. Bison just kind of take up space.
No. See, we'll find out what bison do because they actually help a prairie.
And they're gorgeous.
So who have we got on the line there?
You have Reverend Dr. Bill Shiros from the Holiday Harvest drop-off location at the First Free Church in Andersonville.
And there he is. And good morning, Reverend.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Okay. And I understand you're a little under the weather this morning.
Yeah, I'm fighting a little bit of a flu.
Welcome to the club. Everybody's here. Yeah, we're coughing and hacking and just having a great time. But I'm glad. Okay, I have a quick question for you. I see it listed different ways in different places. Is it the First Free Church, or is the First Free Evangelical, or what's the exact title?
Well, the official name is First Evangelical Free Church of Chicago. We usually go by First Free.
Just easier.
Yeah.
And you're in my old stomping grounds, because I used to live up Andersonville way.
Yeah,
right around the corner from you, as a matter of
fact. We love it.
Yeah, it is. And they're very helpful to you in achieving your mission, I would think.
Yes, very. We partner with the Andersonville Chamber of Commerce, and we've got some great relationships in the community.
And I'm happy to have you being part of the WCPT Holiday Harvest. Thank you so much for your contribution. You're one of our drop-off locations in the city, in our Northside drop-off location. And we will have some barrel there with the WCPT logo affixed to it so you can see. Tell me about and one of the best parts of this is, almost all of our locations, like First Free, you have your own constituency, and you will you work closely with various pantries. And so when the food goes to you, you're going to turn right around and give it to the people you work with. And who are the people you work with?
Now, that would be Breakthrough Urban Ministries. It's a homeless ministry that began in our congregation in about 1992. And subsequently, they've grown and outgrown the Mother Church, and now they're on the west side in East Garfield Park.
And how is it you came to work with them?
Well, as I said, they started in our church, and we used to have the homeless guys sleeping in our church for about 13 years. And just about 3 years ago, they bought property and moved out to the west side. It's a really great organization. They serve about 1,000 homeless people every year, 70,000 meals, provide 24,000 nights of shelter per year, distribute 10,000 bags of groceries to low-income families. So it's a great organization that we really support.
And you told me something the other day when we chatted about something they're doing this year that some folks might want to take advantage of, the store that they have.
Yeah, they have a Breakthrough Christmas store, and really the purpose is to empower neighbors and guests of Breakthrough to purchase really high-quality gifts at greatly reduced rates. And that way, people in lower economic groups can provide gifts for their families, their children, in a dignified way.
That sounds awesome. And their location, I believe I've got up here. Let me see. I want to make sure that I...
yeah, they have two locations. There's a men's shelter at 402 North St. Louis in Chicago. And then there's a woman's shelter nearby at 3330 West Carroll.
Oh, great. All right. 402 North St. Louis and 3330
West Carroll.
West Carroll in the city of Chicago. Fabulous. All right. I'm also going to bring in right now, go to the phones and talk to Bob Coleman, who is with the North Shore Unitarian Church in Deerfield. Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, good morning, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Are you you're one of the only people here who's not sick today, or is coughing, or is doing something? And Bob, you've been working with North Shore Unitarian Church for a long time, I understand.
Yes. Well, we have a what we call our food bank, in which we collect food and contributions from our congregation to purchase food. This is our 28th year, and we distribute primarily in to food pantries in Waukegan, North Chicago, and Mundelein. We make a delivery every 10 days, basically.
And is this year-round?
Yeah, this is year-round.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we have found that during the Christmas season, they usually have plenty of food. It's, you know, January, February, March when they start hurting because a lot of people just, well, the holidays are over and we'll, you know, we'll forget about it.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
But we have been delivering for 28 years, right? I've been working at it most of that time.
You must be tired. After
this morning, I'm not tired.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I got my coffee here.
Oh, fabulous.
But we have noticed the agencies we deliver to, they're serving more and more people every year. And it's harder and harder. I mean, the food is not as available as it has been. I was reading the other day where the Chicago Food Depository is distributing about 12% less food this year to the area pantries. And part of that's because the Department of Agriculture contributions are down one-third to the state of Illinois. So they're getting less food from sources they normally depend on, and they have more people visiting, more people who need food.
So I would ask Reverend Bill Shirios, have you seen the same thing?
That's certainly true.
And it just it sort of highlights that we are in tough times, and we're always in tough times. It seems some people are always in tough times.
Well,
yeah, and it seems like now there's just a greater number.
Wait, hold on.
Sorry,
that's okay, Reverend. You go first, and then Bob will get to you.
Yeah, I was just going to say it seems like you know there's always people in hard times, but we're finding these days there's a lot more people in hard times than usual.
And Bob?
Yeah, I was just going to say there was a chart in the Tribune last week comparing pantry visits this year with 2008, and believe it or not, they're up 60%. 60% more people needing food, and every township out here in the burbs has a food pantry, which is kind of surprising to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think people, although I would hope that by now people understand that food insecurity isn't just an urban problem. It's a suburban problem as well.
Yeah, and it's not just a lower middle class problem. It's become a middle class problem. for many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just feeding the family.
Yeah, what's left of the middle class, I guess.
Yeah, what's left of it. It is, and that's kind of why we were talking about it on Our Town this morning when Heather Fry was co-hosting with Mike Sanders.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. All right. We're talking to Bob Coleman from North Shore Unitarian Church in Deerfield, Reverend Dr. Bill Shirios from the First Free Church in Andersonville. Hang on, gentlemen, for just a second. Let me take care of some business. I have a couple more questions before I let you go. We're talking about the WCPT Holiday Harvest Food Drive, which starts this Thursday. Big broadcast next Sunday, but the food drive goes for 11 days. And this is, I hope, if you're within the sound of my voice, you listen to these gentlemen and you hear the need. And we're saying here on WCPT, feed the need. If you can help folks out, do it. I mean, why wouldn't you? Buy local. That's the other thing. We're encouraging people to buy local. We're encouraging people to buy healthy. But whatever you can do will be much appreciated.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
You've heard us talking about the Grand Street Gardens Holiday Open House this Tuesday, November 29th from 4 to 8 p.m. We hope you stop by for some great holiday fun and bargains, but that's not the only thing going on at Grand Street Gardens. The following Saturday, December 3rd, stop by, that's next Saturday, December 3rd, stop by for their wreath and centerpiece decorating workshop at 10 a.m. where you'll learn how to do it like the pros. Registration is required and there is a small fee for materials. Call 312-829-8200. And a week later on December 10th, bring the kids to make and take pine cone bird feeders. Join the holiday fun at Grand Street Gardens, Chicago's neighborhood garden center, 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago, or grandstreetgardens.com.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Fast away the old year passes.
Ho, ho, ho! Give your holiday event the perfect atmosphere with the Frozen Robins Christmas Caroling Quartet. Fun and funny professional singers garbed in Dickensian costume. Also available, Santa, that's me, Mrs. Claus, and other favorite characters, and hilarious comedy holiday shows. Make your holiday one to remember. Go to ChicagoImprovAssociates.com and hit the holiday button. That's ChicagoImprovAssociates.com.
This is what Heather Fry sounds like right now.
A little bit. And first thing in the morning, usually, too.
We're at that season. We're after, you see, I'm not like the other radio stations that start doing Christmas carols in September.
I am so
proud
of you.
I wait until after Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much. Oh, it's so aggravating. It's like I want to throw turkey legs at them.
Well, But now it's officially the time, and I can do it with impunity.
So, and that is the classic holiday voice right there, Mr. Tom Waits.
Tom
just
Waits.
Gotta love him.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. On the phone with me right now are the Reverend Dr. Bill Shirios from the First Free Church in Andersonville and Bob Coleman from North Shore Unitarian Church in Deerfield. Gentlemen, again, thank you both for being here, because they are part of the WCPT Holiday Harvest Food Drive, which is starts on Thursday. I'm going to just mention it like crazy until people are sick of it, because I want people to be part of this. And as you guys both pointed out, there really is a need for this, and it's important that folks step up and do it. Now, I want to talk about the hours that you can donate. Reverend Bill, at the First Evangelical Free Church, you're at 5255 North Ashland. It's just north of Foster, right?
Right. Yeah, that's correct.
And from what I understand, folks are going to be able to come Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 to 4:30, Wednesdays 6:30 to 8 p.m., and then Sundays from 9:30 to 4. So, you know, basically Sunday, of course, there are services. But the important thing going on here, one of the important things in both places, that you're part of the Faith in Place Winter Farmers Markets. And on the 4th, there's a winter farmers market at the North Shore Unitarian Church. Now, that's 2100 Half Day Road in Deerfield, and that's, Bob, where you are located.
Right.
It's good to have those winter farmers markets where you can get the kind of goods that sometimes you can't get in the winter, the local, preserved, healthy food. And what we're kind of hoping you'll do is buy something at the farmer's market, turn around, and then you drop it in the bin for the holiday harvest. Gentlemen, doesn't that sound like a good idea?
Sounds like a great idea to me.
It sounds like an excellent idea.
Because you're buying healthy and then local and pumping money back into the local economy. Tell me, Reverend Bill, the kind of vendors you work with there at the holiday or at the farmer's markets.
Well, we have some of the vendors that we have during the summer in our summer farmers market that we have every Wednesday night in Andersonville over on Berwyn. Some of those guys are back, and we have healthy food. We've got some Christmas gifts, people making natural Christmas gifts. And so it's really kind of a great opportunity for the community, people in our congregation, to do some holiday shopping, both for food and for gifts.
And up in Andersonville, that winter farmers market is going to be on the 11th.
That's correct.
And now, Bob, and yours is next week.
It's, the 4th, next Sunday, right, December 4th.
Of course, we'll have the bins out there for that. How do folks find the North Shore Unitarian Church in Deerfield?
Yeah, let me get into that a little. We are right off the Illinois Tollway, just east of the Tollway, Half Day Road, which is also Route 22. I believe the first stoplight. No, it's not a stoplight. It's past the first stoplight east of the Tollway. We're on the north side of Half Day Road. 2100 is the address, but that probably wouldn't help folks very much. It's in Deerfield, unincorporated Deerfield. So it's once you find the correct turnoff going east off of the tollway, it's right there.
All right, so the tollway being I-294.
Right,
and
I-94, actually, at that point.
Oh, I'm sorry, 94.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, at 94, not 294, 94.
Right, right.
Just
get off at Route 22, Half Day Road.
And go
a little bit east.
A little bit east of that. And as they head east, are they making a right or a left?
Well, if you're coming from Chicago, you're making a right.
Okay.
If you're coming from up further north, it's a left.
Oh, not off the tollway. I meant
the lake is always east.
Yeah, no. I know, but you're headed. Okay, wait a second. You're headed east on 22.
Yeah.
All right. Are you making a right or a left?
Well, you're turning off on the left on the the north side of Route 22, which would be a left. Off of Route 22.
There you go. Yeah. That's what I thought. All right.
It's a big, modern-looking building with fused glass windows.
And
hard to miss with signage.
Good. Look for the signage. And there's a sheltered area where the CPT bin will be, and you can leave stuff.
Exactly.
Starting December 1st. And the hours I have for you guys, Monday through Friday, 10 to 2, and Sundays... 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Yeah, that's the desirable hours. I think folks could bring stuff any time during the daytime, daylight.
You could probably get away with it.
The barrel will be outside under cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our only concern would be if anything was out overnight, then the four-leggeds would get after it probably.
No, we don't want the raccoons spiriting away our stuff.
But as far as I think during the day, Saturday would be okay, too, as well as Sunday.
Well,
because there's someone there every day.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, if you know, as long as you say so, Bob.
Try to make it easier for everybody.
Oh, I'd love to make it as easy as possible for everybody. So there you go. We start this week. Next Sunday, there's a farmer's market at the North Shore Unitarian Church. And then the following week, there's a farmer's market at the First Free Church in Andersonville. An excellent, easy way to get your stuff, buy the produce, buy the essentials to keep people fed, and drop them in our bin. And gentlemen, both of you, Reverend Dr. Bill Cherios, thank you so much. And Bob Coleman, thank you so much. And we'll be talking soon.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mike, for doing this.
Our pleasure. There's a lot of folks here.
Wonderful.
Well, a lot of folks here working on it, like Heather, like Tiffany Wenrich.
She's brilliant. She's been a driving force in all of this, Tiffany. So we got to give her shout out. So way to go,
absolutely,
Mike.
And Layla Shushani at Faith in Place.
Yes.
Yeah. Rev, were you going to say something?
You very much for including us. We're happy to partner with you.
Yeah, Bob, you had something. Yeah.
Let me add something quickly. For myself, I would buy local and organic food as much as possible. For the pantries, the question becomes, how much food can we get for the money that we have?
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes primary in our mind. You know, taking into account the health, you know.
Sure.
Cheerios are healthier than Frosted Flakes, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But the number, because of the scarcity of food and resources, is primary.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when people are shopping, I think all these things are good to keep in mind.
Well, I think, as I said, we're not going to turn anything down. Not, you know?
Right. Well, that's the way we feel.
Yeah.
Stuff we collect in our church, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you so much. You both have a great Sunday now.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. The starting gun just sounded for the holiday season, and maybe you didn't get your Christmas lights up this weekend, and you're dreading getting it done. If you want to make your holiday tree lights the envy of the neighborhood, especially, you know, if you've got a few trees and you're concerned about keeping them healthy, you should think about the Care of Trees. Their lighting package includes a professional design, setup, takedown, and storage of your holiday lighting and decorations. Their professional-grade lights utilize state-of-the-art fasteners and hardware that will protect your property and can be used year after year, not to mention the LEDs that will reduce your energy costs. And, of course, they will protect the integrity of your trees, one of your most valuable possessions. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Your friends at Grand Street Gardens have a suggestion for your holiday. Why not enjoy wine, cheese, sweets, and savories while shopping for holiday gifts and decor at the Grand Street Gardens Holiday Open House on Tuesday, November 29th from 4 to 8 p.m. The store will be fully stocked with a wide selection of fresh greens, branches, wreaths, Christmas trees, and more. Bad Christmas sweaters just might be worn and might be encouraged. Join the fun. Grand Street Gardens, 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago.
Here we go again. Don't do that to me.
It just, what happened?
I don't know. It just stopped.
Let's, the CD or the...
The CD. Wait. It doesn't like the CD.
Rock,
there we go. Now my mic's on, and your CD is...
And the CD's just kind of going crazy
it's
here.
It's possessed. It has a demon inside...
It stops.
And now we need the reverence to come back and...
Wait, there goes again.
...do an exorcism on the CD player.
It just keeps stopping.
Or it's just not ready for Christmas music either. It's just still digesting its turkey. I like that song.
It's a great song, but... it just stops. Okay. Dear. Technology is your friend.
Yep. This radio is live. You
we had an oh my god on the
yes, on Twitter. My Skinny Garden has tweeted OMG exclamation point, and you and I can't figure out why.
What did I say something bad?
I don't know. I don't think you did.
I think you said something.
So My Skinny Garden, please tweet us again and let us know what the OMG is all about. And if you want to tweet Mike and I, you just follow us on Twitter at Mike Now.
Right, at Mike Now, or you can go to Facebook, The Mike Novak Show.
And like us, won't
like
you?
Us
we
if
like
you.
You.
Yes.
We also like Santo, the bus driver, who calls us all the time.
Did he call?
He called momentarily ago and asked me to pitch that next Sunday, starting at 9 a.m. at the Dan Ryan Woods at 83rd and Western, is the 34th annual Chicagoland Toys for Tots Motorcycle Parade.
You know, starts at 9?
9 a.m.
All right. That's a problem.
Yeah. Well, they could put the little earbuds in and carry us with them.
No. You don't understand. The problem is that you can't get across Western.
Oh, I bet a bunch of bikers on a mission sure can.
Well, you're trying to go east to west. Do they go up all the way to where?
It ends at the DeVry Tech School down in the city, the old, you know, Riverview area off of Belmont there.
Oh, right. So it's basically, so if you're going to cross cross Western Avenue, you better do it north of Belmont.
I'm sure they have a route.
The reason I say this, in all seriousness, is because we're having our food drive here. And there might be some people coming from the east to try to get here to the station, because we're at Pulaski,
Well, I have no problem if there's a sustainable food toy exchange for a greater good happening on the streets. I'm all for it.
I am just letting folks know that this might be a problem. I mean, it really does create it's like when they run the marathon downtown. You can't get... Rick DeMaio, have you ever run into that where you're trying to get around downtown on marathon day?
Oh yeah. My son had participated in marathon the last couple of years, and you kind of know after a while where to go and where not to go. So if you know where to do it prior to it, you're fine. And the key is to stay east the entire time, right along Lakeshore Drive.
Well, for you, but and I had it happen when I was working at Gargantua Radio down the dial, of course my show was on Sundays there, as it is now here. And a couple of times, I just forgot there was a marathon going on, and I was trying to go from west to east, and it ain't going to happen. And you know, try to get to the Tribune Tower on Marathon Day. Oh, my God.
There's your OMG.
But, you know, really, the last couple of years, I figured it out, and it was fine. I made it all the way down from, I'd say all the way north from 35th and Lakeshore Drive up to Evanston in about 20 minutes. It worked out really, really well. It's all about knowing where you're going ahead of time before you head out.
And so I'm just warning people, if you're going to come to the station and drop something off next Sunday when Mike Sanders and I are out here accepting donations, be aware that the Toys for Tots motorcycle ride is happening that day.
Yep. It's going to be. Sanjo just called. He says you can get past Western. He just called on the phone.
Really?
Yes. And started with Rick, so I didn't think we had time for him. So, Santa, if you want to call back, do so.
But he says, by messing with a biker, is that it?
You do not mess with a biker. That is the rule.
I know that.
Especially one dressed up as Santa Claus, because he's a biker with a greater purpose.
Yikes. Okay.
I used to work for a motorcycle radio talk show back in my intern days, so I learned a thing or two. And I have to say, what they do for Toys for Tots every year is amazing.
The show here?
It used to be here, yeah. But it was back in CKG still existed.
The show I used to call Road Rage Radio?
Yes.
Okay.
But I interned for them my first internship out of college when they were still on CKG, which again no longer exists. But I have to say that at Christmas when they did the Toys for Tots, I was humbled and awed. I really was. They did so much. And not to mention.
No, they do good stuff. I'm just saying.
Okay. It was so much fun to be out there. And especially, it's cold and they're all clad in leather and Santa hats. And oh man, it was great. It was just good fun for a great cause. So you can't. It's a win-win. So drop off your teddy bear with the motorcyclists and then grab your oatmeal and your sustainable products and come see us on the other side of town. I believe I got Santo back.
He may be calling you. You get that. Meanwhile, I've got Rick DeMille on the line. And you sent me an article, which I posted at MikeNovak.net on this week's show, about how a little bit of warming can lead to weather extremes. And that's something you preach all the time, right?
Yeah, and Mike, I'm always thinking about how your show would work in a different part of the country. And right now I'm driving through just outside of Scranton, Pennsylvania, and it's amazing, Mike, the amount of environmental issues some of the local papers around here dealing with, not only the major flooding that they had due to Tropical Storm Lee and also what was at the time Hurricane Irene, but also all the tree damage that they had around here with the heavy snow that third week of October. There were several roads that were washed out. Then we got into a very, very warm pattern the first 3 weeks of November, and now they've had, this is kind of weird to say it, but they've had a record harvest of bear and deer during hunting season. And they call it harvest. We really know what they're doing, right?
Yeah. What does that have to do with?
Well, it has to do with, first off, there's just more. Do you know that the state of Pennsylvania has more black bear than any state in the United States? I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
I was totally blown away. And there have been a lot of problems with, there were several accidents on some of the area highways due to too many deer. So the fact that, you know, hunting season started the last week of August, and I think not last week of August, last week of October, then the first two or three weekends of November were rather warm, so everybody was out hunting. And on top of the amazing amount of deer that I guess were harvested, as they call it, a lot of black bear, because I guess a lot of people are having black bear, you know, dig up their trash bins and throwing trash all over the place.
Well, let me ask a question about that. So you can hunt black bear in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of permits. In matter of fact, when I was walking in the woods behind my parents' house, off in the distance, you can hear the sound of those shotguns going off.
Oh my goodness!
Quite frequently. And, you know, it's a bit sad, because when you see a black bear running around with their cubs, you know, you think to yourself, "Wow, this is really, really cool." And the thing also. Sorry about that. The thing about also is that the situation becomes such that I think that when they head into the winter season, they want to make sure that there's also places where maybe the deer could have, you know, cohabitate with themselves and not be, you know, by themselves, you know, maybe trying to figure out, you know, where to get into other people's garbage and things like that. So it's a different story, and I think your show would have a totally different spin on the environment. And another big thing, Mike, here is fracking. Have you heard of the fracking issue that's going on? That's a big thing where...
And it's,
you know,
basically pumping chemicals into the ground to access natural gas.
Oh, yeah. Because what's happening up here is the population keeps expanding, you know, from the cities into the more rural areas. And my parents have had a house up here for 30 years, are still on electrical power. They don't have natural gas. And electricity, you know, after a while, costs a lot of money. Natural gas obviously doesn't cost as much money. So there's people who are saying, you know what, we would really like to have natural gas, as well as a lot of these farms that have been handed over through the years of all of a sudden, you know, kids are becoming a little bit more like, you know, I really don't want to keep this farm going, and I got 30 acres, and someone comes along and goes, you know what, you have 30 acres, 25 of them are in this area where we're going to do some fracking. We'll give you $500,000 for that. What do you think? And they go, yeah, that sounds like a good thing. So there are huge environmental concerns between the state of Pennsylvania and the state of New York, who border the Delaware River. And the Delaware River, obviously, a huge supply of fresh water to a lot of these gas companies who are doing the fracking. And even though I think everybody knows that it's going to eventually go in that direction, they want to make sure that they're not taking too much water away from the Delaware River and also the basin where a lot of people get their water from for drinking. So it is a huge, huge environmental concern here. And I have to say, one that I think is getting a lot of good play. I don't know if you saw there was a piece on 60 Minutes about, I think, a year ago, and they replayed it about 6 months ago about the environmental concerns. And there's a lot of people, young and old, who are getting involved in the conservation effort. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but when you talk about climate change, you talk about global warming, I think what's happening, Mike, also is people just seem to have a better aware of the environment overall. I really do. There's a lot of great coattails that get caught up with that. And your show, Mike, I'm telling you right off the bat, you would probably have 4 hours on a Saturday and 4 hours on a Sunday. dealing with all the environmental concerns in this part of the state. I know we don't have as many of those in Illinois.
But there's always environmental concerns. I mean, we're going to be talking about restoring prairie in Illinois in the second hour of this show. But we have the water concerns here. Slightly different. That's all.
Slightly different. But I think what is definitely needed is more shows like yours, especially in the Chicagoland area, to promote those sort of environmental facts and their or issues. And they're definitely doing the same thing here in Pennsylvania. So it was interesting. One of the things I love to do when I come to smaller cities is I like to look at the small town newspapers to see what the stories are. And right there on the front page were three stories all relating to the environment.
Wow.
Relating to fracking, relating to the bear harvest, and relating to one of the major roads between these two smaller cities in here. But, you know, in some parts of the United States, your smaller route, that's the only road that people can go on. And a 7.5-mile stretch of this particular road was washed out due to a mudslide due to the heavy rains from Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee. Because in this part of eastern Pennsylvania, they've had, since the beginning of the year, nearly 60 to 70 inches of rain. It's amazing.
Wow.
And now they don't expect this road to be rebuilt until the spring of 2012. So you're talking about 6 months from now. So it was pretty. It's definitely an eye-opening experience to go to a different part of the country and see what they're dealing with from the standpoint of the environment.
That is amazing. Hey, listen, Rick, Santo the bus driver has called back, and he's going to tell us how you get across Western. Is that what you're going to do, Santo?
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are, buddy.
Okay, here's how it works.
Okay.
If Rick DeMaio says it's going to be 50 degrees next week, you're going to expect about 30,000 motorcycles. You're definitely not going to get across Western Avenue. If Rick DeMaio says next week it's going to be 32 degrees, rainy, and a miserable day like today, you probably get about 5,000-6,000 bikes. Any way you look at, in coordination with the Chicago Police Department, the Park District, Streets and Sand, everybody that we work with, we send anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 motorcycles out at a time at every at a 15-minute, 20-minute intervals. It's all based upon the police and their coordination and traffic control. So for it'd be like a small train going by. You'll have 15-minute breaks and fuel if we actually get between the traffic. And we've solved a lot of those problems, those concerns that we've been dealing with for the last 34 years.
But you might be waiting for a little bit.
You might have to wait, but it's like waiting for a train or waiting for a broken stoplight or even a school bus, you know. I mean, it's the concerns. But
okay.
You got to remember a couple things. First of all, we bring a lot of good cheer and good joy for needy children out there across the Chicagoland area. The motorcycle community does a lot of charity work, probably far more than I've seen of any other hobby in the United States here. They got deep pockets, and they're all blue collar workers, firemen, policemen, military, and they do a lot of good for the community. Second of all, that parade goes down Western Avenue, and it generates a lot of income for the local bars, restaurants, and whatever down that one day. So, yeah, a little bit of a hassle for some people, but you look at the big economic part of it, you look at the big social part of it. It's a win-win for everybody.
Hey, listen, so. I wasn't saying they shouldn't do it. I was just warning.
I'm just warning people
because you could get caught on the wrong side of that if you're trying to get somewhere.
Right side's the wrong side.
All right, Santo.
Sounds like Michaela has to do with the weather forecast. That's still 7 days away. We can fine-tune that, but I'll
talk to you. I got to go, man.
All right, Santo. Bye-bye. And so 7 days, can you give us that forecast, Rick?
Oh, no. Mike, the next 4 or 5 days look very, very interesting for us from the standpoint of wind and rain today and maybe a little bit of, you know, wet snow tonight. But I don't know if I can go 7 days out right now. That's a little bit of a stretch.
I understand.
Serious. Yeah, this is basically a kind of a situation where I'm not too sure exactly where things are going to work out or how things are working out. So does that mean we're kind of transitioning into the forecast? Is that it?
Well, one more thing before you do that, something else I put online on my website that I think you'll find interesting, and when you get a chance to go to my website when you're not on the road, it's something that Mother Nature Network put out, a story called How to Discuss Climate Change with Your Uncle During the Holidays.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we definitely – I definitely got into a bunch of those conversations because – My parents, as you know, are staunch Republicans, but it was very easy to ask my dad. So Herman Cain, he looks at me and goes, "You're kidding, right?" He goes, "Next." I go, "Rick Perry." He goes, "Move on." Michelle Bachmann, don't even mention her name. He goes, now we have Newt Gingrich to worry about. I'm like, oh my God. And Newt Gingrich, I go, "Dad, you know, he's a very wise man. And by an act of attrition, he's now become the Republican nominee of the month du jour, I guess he'd want to
you
call
know,
it.
I will change that. He's not a very wise man. He's a smart man. I don't particularly think he's wise.
Right, and I think in some sense, I think Barack Obama has kind of done the same thing. Obama is very smart, but also I think sometimes almost a bit too smart to be an effective leader, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's kind of stuck his foot in his own mouth several times. I think he's going to eventually learn that you can't be, you know, pontificating or as dogmatic about certain issues. And I think he's going to learn, I think, with more help from Michelle. I think she's got to come in and say, "Barack, settle down. Let's chill out. Let's kind of figure out how to get things done," because you got people on both sides of the aisle that you have to satisfy here. And I think he's going to have a much more effective second term than the first term, where I think we're just all waiting for Gingrich to kind of stick his foot in his mouth.
Well, you know, I before we get to the forecast here, I would argue that the one thing Obama is not is dogmatic. And there might
really?
Be other things. Yeah, I don't think he is dogmatic at all. Hmm. I think that's been part of the problem, actually, that some people on the left think he should just say, "This is the way it is," and move on. And what he does is he looks for compromise. He looks for solutions that everybody can live with. He's trying to be president to all, and that makes some people crazy.
I think you're right about that. There's never, I don't think there's ever real good mix until maybe you're in your last month of your eighth year. And then you have it all figured out at that point. But in any event, I know we got to get to the forecast, right? How much time do we have?
Yeah, that's right. We've got about 3 minutes, less than 3 minutes. So
we'll do it now. Rain today. Temperatures generally in the low to mid 40s. We'll probably get back into some sunshine during the day tomorrow, but I got a real good feeling we'll probably see a little bit of wet snow tonight. No worry about accumulation. Ground is still kind of wet. So low 40s this afternoon, and then backing back into the 30s by later on today. 20s tonight. Tomorrow, though, looks to be just a sunny, cold day. And then we get right back into a windy day on Tuesday with clouds, rain, maybe a little bit of wet snow mixed in during the afternoon with temperatures again falling back into the 30s. But I don't think we're going to see anything in the way of accumulating snow. Then the rest of the week just looks kind of wintry from a standpoint of temperatures. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all 3 days there, generally in the upper 30s to low to mid 40s, which is typical for this time of the year. We're still not in a, quote, winter pattern yet. The pattern, I always say, in November, very changeable, but definitely nothing in the way of the nice warm weather that we had around here. On Friday and Saturday, we had temperatures both days almost hitting 60, which is kind of normal. You get in those situations this kind of the year. But the real cold, wintry stuff, I still think, is a couple of weeks away, Mike.
Well, you're going to miss your own prediction, which you said measurable snow by the 27th of November, and that's today.
Yeah, that was based on the fact that we'd have a couple of these big storms, which we are having come through, but it just doesn't look like it's going to get cold enough to do that. So while I was right as far as when I think we thought we'd get some snow, it's not going to be as cold enough for the stuff to stick. So we're going to push the arrival of some colder weather back a couple of weeks. But I think everything is still working out to have a very, very active December and early January, without a doubt.
And no predictions for the big motorcycle ride, Toys for Tots, next week.
No, it's a little bit too early on that. I don't want to get everybody's hopes up for what could be something and doesn't happen.
And you don't want the bikers coming after you either. You really don't.
What's that? I'm sorry.
You don't want the bikers coming after you.
No. You don't want bikers coming after you.
No.
I've learned that lesson before.
Rick DeMaio, you can go to DeMaioWeather.com. Go to my website, MikeNovak.net. On the homepage, you can link to DeMaioWeather.com. Great talking to you, buddy. Happy. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good. See you then. Bye-bye.
Second hour of the show, we are going to start with Madewin National Tall Grass Prairie. Some great news concerning that, what used to be called the Joliet Arsenal. A lot of you know about it. If you don't know about it, you should know about this fabulous concept, bringing prairie back to Illinois. We'll talk to you then.
Christmas spirit's all around me, but I just don't feel a thing.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
I'm afraid old Santa won't be coming, 'cause what I want most he can't bring.
Well, that's just darn sad, don't you think? My goodness. It's the Mike Novak Show, as you just heard, on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'll get back to Heather in a second, because I know that we had Bob Coleman wanted to get in an extra word or two about the contributions you can make to the North Shore Unitarian Church in Deerfield, and I think we'll give him a holler when Heather's off the phone line. But meanwhile, in the studio, I have a guy named Paul Botts. Yes, and if that name sounds familiar, it's because his sister does tend to sit it in this big chair, that big chair, every once in a while. How you doing, Paul?
Good, Mike. Good to see you.
I had to issue that disclaimer.
Yes.
Because people might say, well, wait, Paul Botts. Now, they're not married. No, they're brother and sister. And if you have the last name Botts, you're under some pressure to be a mover and a shaker in the environmental world, aren't you?
Well, yes. Let's be honest.
Let's be honest about it. Because your mother, of course, is kind of an icon.
She is. She likes to say she is Auntie Lee to a couple of generations of environmental and conservation activists. Yeah.
Tell me a little of the stuff she's done real quick.
Well, she started actually in the late 60s working for Open Lands when it was a very young organization. And from there, she founded a thing called the Lake Michigan Federation, which is now the Alliance for the Great Lakes. It's become a broader organization. Mm-hmm. And she was very active in Great Lakes issues for a long time, worked for President Carter at a fairly high level, ran a Great Lakes federal agency, worked in the EPA a little bit. And then later in the 90s, in quote-unquote retirement, she founded the Indiana Dunes Environmental Learning Center. So that was sort of her next child, as it were, in the nonprofit world, which is doing well as well.
Mm-hmm.
Both those organizations are. And she's in her early 80s and still kicking, still involved, still irritating people on a regular basis. And, you know, there it is.
But that's what you do.
That's right.
You irritate people and you nudge them and you say, hey, let's get this done, okay? Let's get this done.
Sure, we can go with that.
So so there's just a little bit of pressure on you guys as the children. But you are also the executive director of the Wetlands Initiative, and with you in the studio is Mary Mitsos, who's a vice president of conservation programs for the National Forest Foundation. And good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Mike.
I give you a chance to speak as well. And I'm glad you're here in town because you're not based here in Chicago, are you?
No, our offices are in Missoula, Montana.
Mm. Oh, I love Missoula.
It's a lovely place to be.
A friend of mine moved there from Chicago, and I helped move her over there. So we drove a U-Haul across the country into Missoula. And
wow, that's a friend.
I was actually on my – this was back when I had a house in the Pacific Northwest. So we loaded stuff for that as well. So there was a stop in Missoula, and then – off to the West Coast, the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State. And you haven't lived until you've driven a U-Haul truck through the Rockies.
Yes, that's quite the challenge.
You know, I didn't understand. I gained more appreciation for truck drivers when you're going up a hill and you're just hitting the gas and you can't get past 25 miles an hour and now I really get it. that was when I learned about that. But yeah, Missoula is a beautiful place. Heather, let me ask you, are we going to get Bob Coleman?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's grab him because I know he's got to get to church and he had some extra information. But we're talking about Medewin. National Tall Grass Prairie. And let me ask a question, first of all. It's under the jurisdiction of the Forest Service. And some people would say, why the Forest Service when there's really not much of a forest there? But maybe the answer is because there's no such thing as the United States Prairie Service. But why the Forest Service?
Well, it goes a little bit beyond that. The Forest Service actually manages forests and grasslands. And so they have a number of grasslands in different parts of the country. This is the one and only tall grass prairie, but it was a very unique ecosystem to add to their system. And it was just added in 96. So this is a relatively,
right, this is a relatively new
exactly.
operation.
And a little bit of the backstory, which at the time when the big effort was going on in the 90s. I was a close observer of that. I wasn't directly involved. I was on staff at the Nature Conservancy, but I was working for the people who were working on it. And what I heard back was that as the conservation community in this part of the world really banded together to get the thing designated for conservation as the Joliet Arsenal was being closed, the first idea was that it would go to, or a first idea was that it would go to the National Park Service. But the National Park Service looked at it and said, this is a restoration job. This is not a national park. National parks, you know, the roots of that agency are about protecting places that are already pristine.
Mm-hmm.
The Forest Service's roots as an agency are much more about using the land.
Yes.
So the idea of this pretty unique giant restoration job actually was more comfortable for the Forest Service. Basically, the Forest Service said yes after the Park Service said no.
Yeah, and
in
I
a
think
nutshell.
The Fish and Wildlife Service was in
consideration. Well, the Fish and Wildlife was actually also considered right. and had this much the same reaction.
Yeah,
yes,
their
right.
budgetary line items didn't, the federal budgetary line items didn't line up with what was needed at Madewan.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's sometimes misunderstanding about what the various federal agencies do and their jobs. And I learned about the Forest Service, again, speaking of the Pacific Northwest, when I had a house out there, and it was very interesting. We were on a lake, Lake Quinault, that was surrounded by four different jurisdictions. North side of the lake was National Park Service. South side of the lake was National Forest. West side of the lake was an Indian reservation. And east side of the lake was homesteaded land. Excuse me. So you had... You could see the different ways people operated, especially you got to notice the difference between the Forest Service and Park Service, because as you pointed out, Paul, Forest Service is about utilization. So don't go into a Forest Service area and expect them to preserve the forest forever, because they might decide this is a good forest to chop down and sell to make some money, because that's kind of what they do.
Although I think there's change in that regard. I think Mary and her organization work very closely with the Forest Service, of course, and I think it's fair to say that the Forest Service today is quite different from that of 50 or 100 years ago.
It is. Well, the agency was originally started for a flow of timber and good water supply.
Right. Yeah.
And it really changed after World War II, when there was a huge demand for lumber for the returning vets and building homes, et cetera. They're now going back to, I mean, they still cut timber, but it's mostly for restoration purposes, reduce the risk of fire, improve water systems, all that kind of stuff. There's very little timber for sale for timber's sake anymore.
So they, in essence, have kind of slipped over into the National Parks mission to some degree, where the preservation mm-hmm. is more of a mandate for them.
Or active restoration,
yes.
I think, is more
active
of the
restoration?
Yes.
Right.
And like, as we see at Madewan, Madewan is not much. I mean, if you look at Madewan starting 10 years ago, it's not much about protection.
Yeah, unless you like protecting bunkers.
Unless you like protecting bunkers and rail lines.
I haven't met too many of those people.
And barbed wire fence.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
It's. We'll talk about that in just a second, because I think folks who have not been to Madewan need to go. You need mm-hmm. to go now, because if you're successful in 10 years, it will have changed dramatically. And we'll talk about that initiative. But you need to see it now when it looks like the remnants of an arsenal, which is what it is. And I've been there, and I've seen it, and I've taken photos, and it's stunning. It's stunning in so many ways, because if you look, you can look into the future and see the prairie, but you can also look into the past and see war. And it's mm-hmm. It's awesome in the sense that the real definition of awesome, it fills you with awe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But hang on for a second, because I know Bob Coleman, who was on in the first part of the show, is back with us. He's from North Shore Unitarian Church in Deerfield. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I just wanted to mention that I don't think we got a chance to talk about the food that's needed right now, most specifically.
If you want, let's real quickly, because
I'll
I know
quickly.
That you...
Any non-perishables, and I'd say specifically canned fruits and vegetables, canned meat like tuna, chicken, dry cereals, rice, pasta, paper goods, coffee, and items like toothpaste and soap, and
actually,
anything that's non-perishable would be more than most welcome.
And a lot of this we've discussed over the past few weeks, and is on our website. If you go to WCPT Holiday Harvest on the Mike Novak, MikeNovak.net. We talk a little bit about those non-perishables that are not food, as you mentioned.
Right, right.
Things that people need and right. might not be able to afford.
Exactly, exactly. Right.
So I'm glad you got back to us to remind us that these things are in need, and I would encourage people to go to that link on my website and get more information.
Okay.
All
thanks,
right.
Thanks for bringing me in again, Mike.
No problem, Bob. You have a good day now.
You too.
Bye-bye. In the studio, Mary Mitsos, Vice President of Conservation Programs, National Forest Foundation, Paul Botts, Executive Director of the Wetlands Initiative. We're talking about the Madewin National Tall Grass Prairie. Let's get right to it. What happened in October? The National Forest Foundation got involved. We should explain what the National Forest Foundation is, Mary.
Yes, we're a congressionally chartered nonprofit, and we were chartered in order to be a partner with the U.S. Forest Service. So what our organization does is we work with the agency and communities in and around national forests and grasslands across the country. And we do a lot of restoration work through organizations like the Wetlands Initiative. We do a lot of volunteer engagement strategies. The mission of our organization is to engage Americans in the stewardship of our national forests and grasslands, because in order for them to stay in the future, and it's a fabulous system of public lands, we have to have people aware and engaged.
And in October, you decided that Madewin National Tall Grass Prairie should be part of your Treasured Landscapes campaign. What does that mean?
Well, we have 14 sites across the country, and we tried to choose sites that were very different from one another. So they range from the Tongass National Forest in Alaska to the Ocala National Forest in Florida to Madewin Tall Grass Prairie here. And we worked with the Forest Service and communities to put together restoration plans in each of those sites and in a budget. The budget is a public-private budget, so part of our job as the National Forest Foundation is to raise the private dollars. And for every private dollar we raise, the Forest Service is going to match with a federal dollar to get the work done on the ground. And so Madewin is one of those places.
And so how much do you want to raise? And what I saw in your announcement was that you there's about 2,000 acres that have already been worked on and subject to restoration. You want to attack another 18,000? Is that right?
Well, there's kind of two different things going on, Mike. One of them are we have a project called South Prairie Outwash Plain.
Outwash Plain, that's right.
That is about an additional 2,000 acres. It's a $5 million budget for that. But as part of the process of putting together the plan for those 2,000 acres, one of our board members asked, well, what is it going to cost to restore the entire prairie back to what it used to be? So what we did through the course of the summer and what we announced in October was the shared vision for Madewin. This is the soup to nuts. If we are going to take down all of the infrastructure, restore it all back to tall grass prairie, what's it going to cost? And that is about $100 million in private.
And what's important about that, I think, is – now, let me ask you a question, Mike. When was the last time you were at Madewin?
It's been several years.
All right. Well, then, here's my pitch to you then. In the last several years in particular, that 2,000 acres that you just mentioned that's been restored has been done. And when you last saw it several years ago, virtually none of that would have been yet, frankly, pretty.
Right. I remember going there and watching them put in plugs, seeing a lot of it was still farmland or what was leftover farmland.
You would have seen just the very beginning of that work, which is mostly on the west side of the whole unit. The unit divides, if you look at a map, into a west side and an east side. The west side in total is a few thousand acres, and then the much larger east side, which is the balance, is where you have most, not all, but most of the infrastructure that still has to be removed. Well, on the west side happens to be where the best quality remnants happen to be located.
Mm-hmm.
So our organization, a couple others, and the Forest Service itself have been working very hard the last few years to get good-sized chunks of that west side restored, and the largest is about a 700-acre prairie called Patrol Road Prairie, which I highly recommend everybody go see. It is absolutely gorgeous now. And 10 years ago, it was literally soybeans. 5 years ago, it was just a bunch of plugs, and we were just getting going. And today, it is stunning, and it has more than 200 plant species. It is attracting migrant birds like crazy. It's a beautiful place now. And so, in effect, Madewin, as a conservation site, has sort of backed into a strategy choice, because the strategy choice was, we need to get some parts that have the high-quality remnants, get them restored so there's something for people to see, something to people to experience. There are trails now.
Mm-hmm.
There are lovely places. We've restored some hydrology. There's a place called Lower Drummond that's just stunning. It's an even rarer of the rare prairie. It's Dolomitic prairie. You know, there's things like that that are now beautiful. You can visit, and now you start to get a sense of, oh, this is what the whole thing could be. And that leads into what the NFF convened this summer with all the partners that are involved, which isn't just us. This includes groups like Open Lands and the Nature Conservancy and a very well-organized local volunteer group and more, came together and said, okay, we've learned some things. We know we can do restoration at this site. We're just getting into some of the infrastructure removal. There's been some success with that, some bunkers removed, a little sewage treatment plant, little things like that. Now we've learned some things, and the public is starting to see what could be done. Now, what would it take to do the whole thing? And I think from our perspective as a group that's been involved there on the ground for several years, this was the perfect timing for that kind of exercise, because it's just a logical next step of, oh, okay, so what really are we doing and how are we going to do it? There is a grand overall federal plan called the Prairie Plan, which was done when the thing was designated as a in the Forest Service system. But, of course, it is a giant, thick document that is every single aspect of, you know, complying with 17 different layers of federal regulation. It doesn't hone in on the specifics of, if we want to get the whole thing to a certain state of restoration within a certain number of years, what does that cost? That's what the NFF convened all of us, including the Forest Service. I should make that clear.
Yes,
the Forest
absolutely.
Service people were very active participants in this effort.
Mm-hmm.
So that now we really have a blueprint. But I really encourage people to go see what has been done already, because it's quite different from even just a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you go to that section that the prairie has been restored for going on 7 years now, it changes every year. But some of the...
Oh, yeah, this is all still going on.
Right.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But some of the forb species that are planted are now, you know, 8 feet tall over everybody's head. And you can really get lost in there. You sort of forget you're in the middle of an industrial complex.
And I don't know, it was on one of your sites. It's something that folks probably don't quite understand if they're not restorationists and they're not involved in this sort of thing, is that you can't just mow it down and then think all those – well, the prairie will reappear. No. It's when I was there, it was very interesting how they explained to me, okay, we're going to do these plugs, and they're actually succession plants because – these are we need to get a foothold first before we can even put in some of the other plants, because we'll just lose them. We're just wasting our money. And amazing how you have to do it very scientifically and move from, you know, kind of almost like decade by decade,
right,
to get this done properly.
Right. And one of the really important pieces and a tool to use for restoration is prescribed fire. And it's something that I think probably in this area not a lot of people are used to, but if you don't get fire back on the landscape, you won't get that same kind of prairie succession either.
Well, so, I think we've got – it varies in this part of the world, although actually Chicago, mm-hmm, the Chicago area is one of the originating homes of the notion of doing prescribed fire, certainly in urban suburban areas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is. That's true. The whole Chicago Wilderness Coalition, originally founded by a bunch of people who had done that. But that's
one. And I have actually been on a burn. I
sure.
Went out with Jack Pizzo
sure.
and his staff got to see how that's done, and it's really fascinating to see how you do a prescribed burn.
Very carefully.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's little tiny sections,
that's
you know,
right.
And you work your way across little tiny sections, and you make sure that's under control and that got burned properly. Okay, is that fire down? Okay,
right.
Now we can move on to the next one. Yeah.
Because, you know, you think it's bad. I mean, it is bad out west when they do a prescribed burn on one of the big areas, and it gets out of control, and if
right.
some homes get burned, that's bad. But imagine that happened here in the suburbs.
You
imagine
no, I
what
can't.
That would be like politically and otherwise? No.
Well, you know, there's always the people who say you can't do a burn because what happens to all the little critters? You're killing critters. Not so much, really.
Not so much. In fact, you're benefiting them in the long run.
Yeah. That is Mary Mitsos, who's the Vice President of Conservation Programs for the National Forest Foundation. Paul Botts, Executive Director of the Wetlands Initiative, is also in studio. Hang on, guys. When we come back, I want to say the magic word, because I'm a media guy, so I gravitate to the most fun part of it. And the most fun part is bison.
Oh.
Bison. I want to get to that in just a second, and that's what we'll do.
Fast away the old year passes.
Oh, my. Give your holiday event the perfect atmosphere with the Frozen Robins Christmas Caroling Quartet. Fun and funny professional singers garbed in Dickensian costume. Also available, Santa, Mrs. Claus, that's me, and other favorite characters, and hilarious comedy holiday shows. Make your holiday one to remember. Go to ChicagoImprovAssociates.com and hit the holiday button. That's ChicagoImprovAssociates.com.
You're going to stop by the Grand Street Gardens Holiday Open House this Tuesday, aren't you, from 4 to 8 p.m.? Take advantage of great green holiday bargains. Or stop by on Saturday, December 3rd, for the Wreath and Centerpiece Decorating Workshop at 10 a.m. Or bring the kids to make and take pinecone bird feeders on December 10th at 10 a.m. Or bring them on December 17th for make and take popcorn cranberry garlands at 10 a.m. Or stop by for all of the events. Join the holiday fun at Grand Street Gardens, Chicago's neighborhood garden center, 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago. Call 312-829-8200, 312-829-8200, or grandstreetgardens.com.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
There's a choir outside of my house singing Silent Night. For any little thing that's gone wrong, Christmas makes it right. The children are singing Christmas carols and everybody's holding hands. We've got that Christmassy feeling again.
Not one of Johnny's best, but it's okay. Anything Johnny does, Johnny Cash, is all right with me. Even weird holiday songs.
Well, you know, a Johnny Cash Christmas song is going to have a pretty little thing going wrong in it.
Yeah, something. Yeah, and somebody's going to end up in jail.
That's right.
That's the way. And drunk. Yeah, that was the one. I was actually looking at another one on my CD here. Santa Came Home Drunk. I didn't have time to cue that one up, but that was Clyde Leslie and the Cadillac Baby Specials. Maybe we'll do that before the end of the season. All right, back to Madewin National Tallgrass Prairie. Mary Mitsos and Paul Botts are in the studio. Bison. I that's the thing that caught my eye. The idea that we might, in the grand scheme of things, bring back bison to the Illinois prairie. You know, when I think of bison, I think of the Great Plains west of here. Mm-hmm. But back at the beginning of the 19th century, they were all the way over into Ohio and pretty much throughout the country. Millions and millions of bison, which we systematically slaughtered, as I mentioned earlier, because I've had Joel Greenberg on to talk about Project Passenger Pigeon. We managed to wipe out Passenger Pigeon. How is it the bison escaped that?
Well, there were a few, and I mean by a few, I mean literally measured, I believe, as maybe even less than 100.
Yeah, I think it was just
a
handful.
In the Yellowstone area.
Yeah, that's yeah. right.
At one point, I put up on the website because I was, when I saw this, I started doing a little research on it, and I've got the timeline. The American bison mm-hmm. timeline. So while you guys are talking about that, I'm going to go through and find that because it's – wait a second. Just hang on one sec because I can bring that up. And what we did and how quickly we did it is – okay, it's the timeline of the American bison and – 1500s, an estimated 30 to 60 million bison living in North America. And then, let's see, 1802, bison gone from Ohio, pushed out by pioneers and settlers. 1830, mass destruction begins. 1840s, west of Rocky Mountains, bison disappeared. So they were west of the Rockies, too, but they, never large numbers, but there were some there. 1844, may have been peak year for Hudson Bay Company, as 75,000 bison robes were traded to posts in Canada. And it goes on and on, and especially in the 1860s and 1870s. On the Southern Plains in 1872, an average of 5,000 bison were killed each day. Every day of the year, as 10,000 hunters poured into the plains. One railroad shipped over 1 million pounds of bison bones. Bison hunting became a popular sport among the wealthy. And then, and part of this is states would pass laws against killing bison, often after they had already disappeared from the state.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way we work in America.
Yep. Well, it's interesting that the history of the species is actually longer than that, of course. And some scientists believe, and have in recent years have used the fossil record to construct an argument that actually the bison population, that the 30 to 60 million head bison population that was documented 400 or 500 years ago was itself unnatural.
Unnaturally high?
Unnaturally
low?
High, yes. And the what the record seems to show is that, first of all, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15,000 years ago when Homo sapiens came over the Bering Strait into the Americas, Homo sapiens within about 1,000 years managed to wipe out every top predator, basically. And so the bison then, among other species, would have sort of unnaturally ballooned at that point.
Okay.
Then it's just like in Australia when the first humans reached Australia several tens of thousands of years ago, they wiped out dozens and dozens of large species that
had
never
encountered
humans.
Yeah, we take out all the
before.
Predators first.
That's
is what
right.
we do.
Yeah. Because these species did not co-evolve with us, so they don't have the natural fear of us.
Mm-hmm.
So then fast forward some thousands of years, and before it was apparent to the Europeans what was out in the interior of the continent, the Europeans' diseases had already hopscotched across the continent, so that by the time the French voyageurs and explorers got to this part of the world or further west and started reporting back about these enormous millions of head bison herds, the Native Americans who had been themselves systematically slaughtering, living off these species, and they'd been doing it in very what we would call non-sustainable ways. They'd been running herds of bison off cliffs in order to eat three of them, kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the Native American population had already been drastically reduced by the diseases that had hopscotched ahead of the Europeans by the time we start to have actual written reports from Europeans. So there's a sort of a battle up and down of these wild swings of factors going on off outside of what we would call, you know, a written record.
Mm-hmm.
Then you fast forward to the 19th century and the situation you just described, which then takes the bison in particular down to this, I believe, truly incredibly small number of individuals.
I've got one
critters.
Here. In 1884, there were around 325 wild bison left in the United mm-hmm. States, including 25 in Yellowstone.
Right. So from that, a number of different parties have, over the last century plus, brought the bison back. There are herds on both public and private lands scattered around the country now. Some of them fairly substantial, some of them on some fairly substantial pieces of ground. I've personally done with some years ago with my family, you can do a sort of a, like a safari in Africa. You can do a driving, stay in your car, do not, you know, attempt to pet the bison kind of thing through a couple of different places, one of which is the Nature Conservancy's big Tallgrass Prairie Preserve in northeastern Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I think there's a couple other places you can do this now, too, where you are just very slowly, carefully driving, and the bison are just all around you, and there's no fence between you and the critter, and that's really pretty cool, I got to tell you.
Well, are we going to have that in Illinois?
Well, one day, perhaps. This, let me put it this way. This site here, Medewin, this is the first site in Illinois, actually, first site even real close to Illinois, that has both the physical size and the characteristics in terms of the flora and the ground to enable us to contemplate doing that. This is the first one. There are other beautiful prairie restorations in this part of the world, but none of them are anywhere near this big and contiguous. So, and the other thing about Medewin is, Medewin, actually, since long before it became part of the Forest Service, even when it was the Joliet Arsenal, had lots of grazing ground within its boundaries. The Arsenal operation, for fairly obvious reasons, needed a whole lot of buffer. I mean, that's why the thing is so big. And what they bought in the first place in 1940 was a whole bunch of ag ground, and they built their rail lines and their infrastructure to make the bombs and did that kind of out in the middle in different places. But they've got lots of grazing leases always around it. So there's lots of ground that has already been used for that purpose that, you know, a bison would look at and go, oh, I could live there. You know?
Yeah.
But I think we should point out that, you know, we were talking about the thundering herds in the West. And my understanding is there were never thundering herds in this part of the country. And so we're not going to be, even when bison is reintroduced there, it's not going to be, not going to be driving
thundering
millions
herds.
Of animals.
Not but, millions, but it would be hundreds, maybe thousands if we got to the very upside. But it
but
would
that,
be hundreds.
Even that would be interesting because there's, I assume, nothing like that in this part of the country.
Not that
certainly
I'm
not
aware
roaming
of.
On any kind of pasture land. There are a few around, you know, in fences for tourists to look at in a couple of places.
Or, does anybody farm them around here for the meat? Because that's a pretty common
I'm not aware of an operation like that in Illinois. There certainly that does exist. We've all had buffalo burgers. You know, it's really
great
bison.
Stuff.
Yeah.
unless you're a vegan or a vegetarian. But then getting back to the restoration and you mentioned the arsenal and the way they constructed it. And as I said, they're still dotted with bunkers. Are you going to – I would hope that at least a few of those are saved as a reminder of what was here. Because it is part of the history as well.
Yeah, there will be. I don't think the Forest Service has figured out which ones yet. But there are a lot of people who are actively engaged in trying to decide where to tell that part of the story. Because it is a pretty – if that arsenal wasn't there, Medewin wouldn't be there today. It would
just
be development.
That's the irony. Yeah. Again, I've had Jerry Edelman from Open Lands on the program to talk about the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve up at Fort Sheridan. Same thing. If it weren't for the military, that piece of land wouldn't have been available. I consider it somewhat ironic, you know, considering what, you know, they had to also clean ordnance off of that piece of property, and they had to do that at Medewin. Mm-hmm. And yet, because those lands were there and the military held them, they weren't developed.
Yeah, there's another beautiful example of the same thing in Illinois. It's out on the Mississippi River called Savannah Army Depot. I mean, it was called Savannah Army Depot.
Right.
I forget the designation now. I believe it's Fish and Wildlife Service. And it's something like 10,000 acres of bottom land beneath the bluffs right on the Mississippi River. And there's no way that wouldn't all be high-end second homes by now if it hadn't been an Army Depot for 100 years. And now it's a beautiful site that you can visit.
So there, as I said, it seems to be some sort of irony at work here, but a good one.
A very good one.
So the thing about Medewin, and by the way, if folks listening, you should know it's spelled Midewin. And people will look at it and say it's Midewin. But it's pronounced Medewin, and it's kind of like the secret handshake among environmentalists. If you don't know how to pronounce Medewin, then you don't know anything. But we don't really care how you pronounce it as long as you contribute to its restoration.
Absolutely.
Is you mentioned another tall grass prairie, Paul. I'm sure they are in other parts of the country. What makes Madewin so special? Is it because it's in Illinois, or is this going to be the largest tall grass prairie in the country or restoration?
When it's fully restored, yes, it'll be the largest tall grass prairie.
So it's not the fact that it just happens to be in Illinois, you know, and east of the Mississippi, but it will in fact be the largest.
Correct. I think the Nature Conservancies is...
the Nature Conservancies, the Tallgrass Prairie Preserve, which is at the very corner of the range of Tallgrass Prairie, and it is, as a whole site, larger than Madewin, but not all of it is Tallgrass Prairie. It's right on the edge of the range. This is the heart of this unique system that exists in nowhere place else in the world in terms of the richness of the soil, the diversity of the plant community. Tallgrass prairie is actually rarer than the rainforest, much rarer than the rainforest, and has enormous diversity of species. And this site here is, you know, beautiful, high quality, heart of the range. And on top of that, being so big, tallgrass prairie is emphatically one of those natural systems where size matters. Absolutely. Yep. They're for the insects, for the birds, for the mammals. The size of the site matters. Fragmentation is the enemy.
Yeah.
And so the ability to have a contiguous area of tallgrass prairie isn't just a matter of it's the biggest. It also means it can end up being the highest quality because the size feeds back into the quality of the site.
Well, that was going to be another question I was going to ask is how will this affect biodiversity in this region as a whole? You would think that plopping down a prairie in the middle of it is suddenly going to change nature in our area.
Well, for the acres that have already been restored, species are coming back that hadn't been there in a while.
That's right.
And it's really excellent habitat for birds in particular, migratory birds. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I think they have something like 150 different species of jumping spiders. I didn't even know they existed.
The insect richness
jumping
is
spiders?
Astounding.
Yes.
Insect and just invertebrates of all kinds. And it's also worth keeping in mind, too, that Madewin, if you step back further from the map, you realize that Madewin is adjacent to or quite close to some other areas that are already protected. So there's state lands. This Plains Fish and Wildlife Area is literally just across the road and on the Kankakee River. And there are some high-quality designated state nature preserves, which is the system that is the highest quality remnants in the state. There's several of them right around Madewin, one of them adjacent. There are county forest preserve lands. The Will County Forest Preserve District is a quite active district that has been acquiring land. So we actually have a map in my office that sort of takes one step back and looks at that whole area around Madewin, and you have within a certain area south of Joliet, sort of south and going a little bit west from Joliet, you have over 40,000 acres of either contiguous or nearly contiguous conservation land with various designations by various levels of government. And, you know, that is really different.
Especially, again, east of the Mississippi, I would think. I mean, you can get that in Alaska.
Sure.
You can get that in some of the larger states out west.
Oh,
But to bring that back to Illinois just seems fabulous.
At that scale, yeah, it's really something.
And when you look at it on a map, you can it sticks out, especially if you look at it in the Chicago Wilderness map. You know, Madewin is an anchor down there and by far the biggest piece.
By far, yeah. And the other two largest conservation protected areas in the Chicago Wilderness region would be the Indiana Dunes. You have the National Park. It's about 15,000 acres. Actually, I think that's the national park, including the state park. It's 15,000 acres. And then you have the Palos Hills Forest Preserves, which of Cook County, which, again, it's in the ballpark of, I want to say, 14,000 acres. Those are very big. The next biggest after that is probably not even half those size. Might be Fermilab, I think, and some of the other chains of forest preserves around the system. But you go down to where Madewin and the land surrounding it, and you start talking about a conservation belt that's 40,000 acres. That's a whole different deal. And that does bring up at least possibilities of things like ultimately restoring the full system, which would include large ruminants. That would include bison. I mean, large hooved mammals are part of the tall grass system just as much as the flowers and the birds and the insects and the ground mammals and everything else.
Some of the people listening to the show agree with me for the the cheap thrills because I have a tweet that says talking about bison on, on Mike Novak's show.
That is
I'm with you, kids. You know,
nothing like that charismatic megafauna.
You gotta love those. You know, and it seems a shame because I know that restoring the prairie involves so much and so much detail and so much of the smaller things. And one of the things you wrote to me about, Paul, was drainage is a huge part of dealing. And on this land, you've got different kinds of land. You've got wetlands, you've got uplands, you've got dolomitic prairie, you've got a little bit of everything, right?
That's right. Well, I often get the question of, you wetlands guys, you're the wetlands guys. Why are you restoring prairie? Tell me that. Well, a healthy tallgrass prairie, particularly this is a wet mesic tallgrass prairie. This is a quite moist system. It's actually a mosaic. It's not flat like a table. The thing we all heard in school that originally when we were kids about a sea of grass is completely wrong. It's not a sea of grass. It's a sea of flowers and all sorts of things. And furthermore, it's not flat like a table. It rolls. It's got hydrology. So it turns out actually one of the very first things you have to do to restore healthy tallgrass prairie is restore the hydrology. So you got to get those drain tiles out of there.
Which we use for farming.
The farmers put in this 500-year-old amazing technology that drains farm fields with just a clay pipe, yay long, 3 feet down.
Yeah.
You got to find them. You got to get rid of them. You let the water stay instead of being siphoned off. And guess what? The prairie seed bank will just come right back up for you. And all kinds of miraculous stuff happens. But the first thing you got to do is fix the hydrology.
Right. They just did that up at Deer Park East.
Right.
And they took out all the drain tiles and suddenly, boom, there's all these ponds and natural places where the water gathers.
Lots of prairie is intermittently wetland. It's a mosaic. It's back and forth. It's not a black and white thing at all.
Right, and when you get that water back in there, some of the seeds that have been buried for 100 years, they're still viable.
Yeah, the first time I heard that blew my mind. Like when I was working for the Conservancy in the 90s and I was working for folks who were doing some of the prairie restorations that you're familiar with, they started talking about the seed bank and they started talking about they've proven that seeds can be sitting in the ground for 100 years. And then if you put the water back and you get the invasive species off so they have set the right conditions, they will come back up. That just blew my mind.
Well, you know what? Weed seeds can do that, too.
Well, since then, I've learned more. That's right. But yeah.
Weed seeds can do. I'm reading this wonderful book called Weeds. And it's the guy, Richard Mabey is the guy who wrote it, and he's British. And he makes an argument that in terms of weeds, we're connected to weeds, and I love the way he speaks about it, and it makes a lot of sense. It's like wherever you get weeds is where human activity is, and so weeds have adapted to us, and they like the kinds of things we do when we disturb soil and we compact it, and this is human nature. So that's part of the problem. You have to undo human nature to bring in the plants from the prairie as opposed to the weeds that we've introduced all over the world, and we have the weeds follow us all over the world.
Yeah, and that's actually a big part that we hadn't talked about. Not only do you have to put in the native seeds, sometimes they come back on their own, sometimes you have to propagate them, but you also have to have a continuous effort to remove those non-natives.
And at some point, the idea is that the prairie plants crowd out the non-natives and they can't survive.
That's right. You got to get to certain tipping points, and then very low-tech stuff like periodic burns can just let the balance
Well, Mary Mitsos and Paul Botts, thank you so much. It's a grand, grand scheme, and you want to get this done in about 10 years? Is that it?
That's the goal.
That's the goal. But
good because originally they were talking 50 years or 100
that's right.
years.
And for a number of years, it kind of just – there wasn't much activity there for first few years on the ground. But there is now, and I really encourage people to come out and see it. Even if you've seen Medewin 5 or 10 years ago, come see it again.
I'm going to do
that.
It's
already changed.
Absolutely. And there's a video I've linked to on my website, when you go to the National Forest Foundation. And I've got links to that and the Wetlands Initiative and Medewin National Tallgrass Prairie. Take a look at it and see what's going on. And if you can get down there for a work day, I've had on the program Allison Cisneros, who's a volunteer coordinator.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. She's absolutely great.
She's been on the program, and they have these days where they put in plugs and they just say, come on, help us out if you can.
And that's growing. We can tell visibly just being down there all the time is yeah. that the volunteer, it's, you can see it growing.
And then in 10 years, we'll have bison. And I'm looking okay. forward to it. And that is
getting, and Mike gets to name the first one.
And it sent Mary into a coughing fit. Yeah. The guy goes, what's this with this with this radio guy? He keeps talking about the bison, all right? Bison. Okay. Thank you both for coming down to the studio. I really appreciate it.
Thank
Absolutely,
you, Mike.
Our pleasure.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. We haven't had that first winter storm yet, but you know it's only a matter of time. If you have mature trees in your yard, you just might want to have the Care of Trees phone number handy. They can't restore your power after a big storm, but they do have 24-hour emergency service, and they can take care of your damaged trees. Many people don't understand how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees yourself, especially if a tree falls on a car, other structures, power lines, or even other trees. The Care of Trees offers 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
You know that Black Friday is coming, but are you ready for Green Tuesday at Grand Street Gardens? That's their holiday open house on Tuesday, November 29, just after Thanksgiving. Have some wine, cheese, sweets, and more while shopping for Christmas trees, garlands, poinsettias, bows, pine cones, and tree stands. Local artists will be on hand showcasing their homemade Christmas items. Bad Christmas sweaters are encouraged! Tuesday, November 29th from 4 to 8 p.m. at Grand Street Gardens, 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago.
As we lurch towards the holidays, wait a second, too late, we're already in the holidays. How about making your gift giving a little easier? Get your gardening friends and family a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. One of the reasons they'll be grateful is because of the Q&A column. That means question and answer. In the front of the magazine, in the November-December issue, there are questions and answers about whether to cut back your Hoya plant. You all have one of those, right? Moving a Japanese maple tree and planting a living Christmas tree outdoors. Now, that might not mean much to you unless you want to cut back your Hoya, move your Japanese maple, or plant a living Christmas tree. Just saying. And there's much, much more in every issue for your Zone 5 garden, indoors and out, including my column on the inside back page. After reading it, your friends and family might wonder what kind of message you're trying to send. Just saying. Give the gift of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine this year to subscribe for yourself or somebody else. Call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600 or go to Chicagoland Gardening. Hello. ChicagolandGardening.com. Okay. Shall we try a little roulette here? I don't know what's going to come up here. A little holiday music roulette. Not so bad.
No, it's really nice.
So you coming down now?
A little bit, yeah. Then I'm on a. In order to try to nuke this cold before Sunday, I got some antibiotics, and they have very swift and very abrupt side effects when they want.
Yeah, I noticed you just grew a horn in the middle of your forehead.
And then I thought, what's this tail back here all about? I have no idea. As long as it doesn't have a little red point at the end, I think Santa will still be nice to me.
Exactly.
But we'll see. I am a redhead after all. Who knows?
hey, Mikey Sanders, if you're out there...
He's my hero. My Mikes. I love my Mikes.
You got two of them here on Sunday.
And it's fabulous.
If Sanders is out there, he should come into the studio because we should promote our big broadcast next week. And I want to give Kathleen some props, too, for the latest she's got up on the Holiday Harvest page. Yes?
Speaking of food, though, we have a tweet from Forever Flavor 6 who says he's totally craving a buffalo burger right now.
There we go.
And I've had one, I will admit. And, like, I know you want to preserve the species and all. They really are tasty, tasty meat.
And apparently, well, you can, if you do it sustainably.
Yes. And apparently it is better for you than standard beef. Bison. It has less fat and everything, I believe. But it's
that's
good.
That's what I hear, too. Now, mm-hmm. I thought Kathleen had put up on the Holiday Harvest Food Drive page the stuff. I saw it earlier. I don't see it now. What's going on here? It was about the kinds of things you can donate that are not food.
I saw that. Hold on.
Where is it?
Hold on.
Oh, you know what? My bad. I made a change to the page this morning.
You silly. Well, luckily, we have backup on Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Hey, Kathleen, I made a change to the page and I didn't save it properly. I didn't change the new stuff you put on there. Oh, man, I can't believe I.
Yeah.
That happens.
The Essential 8 that they're listing as healthy options for the food drive on the radio station's website is oatmeal, canned fruit, canned vegetables, peanut butter, pasta, mac and cheese, tuna, and canned meats. And then it lists, there's a hot link for healthy options and sustainable choices.
Yeah, but the thing that she had this week was the non-food
right, like
items
toothpaste.
Like toothpaste, paper towels. See, I get stuck after that point because she had it up there and I screwed it up because I changed one little thing on the site and forgot to save the latest thing when I did that. So... If you're listening and you do that, Kathleen, that would be really cool. But she'd have to do it in the next 4 minutes.
Whoops.
But it'll be up there.
Yes.
And then next week, so Sanders must have ducked out for a taco.
Oh, or he's feeling his medicine, too. I think everybody's sick.
Yeah.
it's that time of year.
But next Sunday from 8 to 11, Mike and I will be doing our Holiday Harvest broadcast. And what?
And am I going to be in a street corner somewhere?
I don't know where you're going to be
yet.
Yeah,
I was curious about that.
You know, we're still trying to figure it out. What I want to do.
No digs on working the street corner either, mister. All right.
I didn't even go there.
You thought it.
Yeah. I always do. That's where my mind goes. All right. Now
I'm going to cough. Going to cough it.
Coughing up a lung
yep.
right there.
Yep.
But what I'm hoping will happen. Hey, there it is. She's good.
Isn't she?
She's just so
she
good.
She is real good.
Kathleen.
You are a lucky man.
She did that in about 2 minutes.
Yep.
That's hilarious.
That's why she's the holiday webmaster and you're the host.
I know it. Diapers, any size, adult diapers, baby wipes, baby powder, feminine hygiene products, toilet tissue, paper towels, toothpaste, toothbrushes, bath soap, deodorant, dishwashing detergent, laundry detergent, all good stuff
yep.
that you can put non-perishable, non-food items if you want to donate those. And so next week, thanks, Kathleen. Next week, what I'm hoping we do is Mikey and I, that's why I also wanted to know what the weather was going to be. I'm hoping we stand outside waving our microphones and talking to people on the street. So I don't know if you're going to be here at the in the big chair while we're out there or we're in here, or we might do both. We might just go out and come back. But I want to encourage people to—
Tag team radio.
Right.
Inside, outside.
To roll up along the front of— the building,
the
beautiful showcase studio, drop off your stuff because we'll have the barrel. And I think we got to put Mike in one of those costumes, like the Liberty costume, like when you know that you see standing outside of shopping centers.
I do believe I have a full Santa suit, belly and all.
Are you kidding me? What do you do?
No.
Just keep this spare one in the closet?
Yeah. Duh, doesn't everybody?
Can we get Sanders in that, do you think?
I can if...
Oh, and before we go...
I can't promise him, but I can get it for you.
Before we go, you should also know that on the homepage of my website is the video pull that up for a second.
Yes.
Let's see if we can play a little bit of that. Ron Cowgill coming to my basement.
Yeah.
You got to take a look at this. Ron Cowgill came to my basement. Roll on that, baby.
You break into people's houses and you fix things. I mean, what could they say?
We grab the honeydew list off the refrigerator.
Exactly.
And we run around
the house before they get home.
Yes.
You've got good friends.
Yeah.
I mean, you see my basement and Ron Cowgill there.
Assembling the two line hose and the gun.
And the spray foam that we put insulation in the basement.
This will solidify in here and then it's no good. So you have to keep moving once you start. If you do stop...
Cowgill's the best.
Can you wash it out?
From Mighty House on Chicago's Progressive Talk on Saturdays from 7 to 10. So you can see the whole video and see me with a spray gun in my hand, which is a really dangerous thing. Landreth Seed Catalogs, D. Landreth Company, are arriving. A friend of mine got them, and they are on the way right now. So you should be getting your catalog. We're going to follow up more about that later on. And... tune in next Sunday, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., me and Mike Sanders and Heather Fry. Until then, go green or
go home.
See you then.